Thanks for clicking on our podcast. This is John Fraser, and with my partner in wine down in the Cape, Michael Olivier, each week we taste the very best that the Cape has to offer in wines or spirits, whatever tickles our fancy, and hopefully it'll tickle yours as well. And we're back with Divine Intervention and with some people that you will remember from our last two podcasts, because we've managed to kidnap them and get them back in the studio once again. This time we are straying outside South Africa's frontiers. As you know, Michael Olivier, my partner in wine, and I are great advocates for South African produce and products. But occasionally it's useful just to benchmark ourselves against all the muck that's produced elsewhere in the world. Not that our next offering is anything muck-like, I hope, because it was selected by the nose, palate, and sense, every other sense, touch, taste, you name it. Michael Olivier in Cape Town, you are one of those people who knows your wine, so I assume you won't let us down today.
Yeah, these are standards, John.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Michael. That was a brief and offensive introduction, but I'm sure you're used to that by now. I have to also introduce our studio guests. We have Debbie van Flyman from Wine Cellar, a Cape wine master, and somebody who I've been delighted to sit next to at more than one wine-ish function this year. It was a great pleasure meeting you, Debbie, and I'm glad that for the third time in a row you've managed to come into the studio.
Thank you so much for having me.
And, of course, Jo van Wyk Fourie from KWV. You bought us a couple of nice wines last week. Now you can sponge off us. Great to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
And last but not least, a man who works for a bank, so he's used to sponging off people, Chris Gilmore.
Thank you, John.
Okay, Michael Olivier, it's a Spanish wine. It's a Vina Sol. It's a white. I'm pretty sure you can find it in Woolies, because I think they've been promoting these people quite a lot recently. Why are we drinking a Spanish wine?
Oh, John, this is just something that is so different. And, you know, these wines are available in Woolworths, and they're just so reasonably priced.
And forgive me, Michael, I didn't properly introduce it. How would you introduce it as a wine expert?
How would I introduce the...
The name of the wine.
Oh, the Torres Vino Sol.
Excellent. You said that much better than I ever could.
There are a couple of other Torres wines. I've just mentioned them quickly. One is the Coronas Tempranillo, the 2011. Tempranillo is called Tinta Roriche in the Douro and Aragonese down in Alentejo. And they make this really stunning wine. Blend in a little bit of Cabernet Sauvignon, really, really great. And then the Sangre de Toro, which is the 2013, also a Torres wine. And, I mean, it sells for like 70 rand a bottle in Woolworths. It is an absolute belter of a wine. It's a wonderful, wonderful red blend. But the wine we're talking about now is the Torres Vina Sol. It's a blend of Parellada and white Grenache grapes, which are sort of fairly typical Spanish grapes. And Miguel Torres, who is the sort of the elder statesman now of the Torres family, he was very keen to make his mark, and he found a little winery in the Penedes, and they started making this wine. It's got the most lovely color, very pale, sort of golden straw color, clear, bright, and then on the nose, just this mass of sort of mélange of ripe fruit and white flowers, and lovely sort of citrus notes here and there, like sort of nachi peel. And then on the aftertaste, it's got a slight taste like maybe there were some eucalyptus trees on the edge of the vineyard, but it's got that sort of eucalyptusy, minty, slight sort of tang to it. I think this is a stunner. It's great. It's got a lovely long aftertaste too.
Well, I'm enjoying it a lot, Michael. I was a little facetious at the beginning, but I've visited Spain a few times. I've really enjoyed their wines. And I think, for instance, Spanish cuisine is one of the Cinderella cuisines of Europe. It's not as well known, it's not as well appreciated, but you try their ham, their cheese, their seafood, some of the most simple, excellent ingredients cooked superbly. A bar with tapas and sherry, what a treat.
John, just quickly, I... I was in Spain and I was on a coach and we stopped literally at a little road siding. It was like those sort of parking places you find in the Karoo. And there were probably 20 or so of us on the coach. There were about six chaps on the side of the road with these massive paella pans. And they were cooking paella for us for lunch. And they were cooking it with orange wood. And the flames were sort of licking up around the edge of the paella pan, and the smokiness and the flame was all being added into the dish. And this wine would have been perfect with that paella.
And of course, you could have had apple paella for dessert.
Yes.
Sorry about that. Joe, are you enjoying this? I see you're gazing with admiration at the bottle. Not that it's as pretty as any of the KWV bottles, but it does have a sunny thing on it.
I think it's a lovely coiffure. I think it's a wonderful wine. It's something very, very familiar about it. And I think that's sort of the sun in the wine that we always say. This is perfect for end of your work day, feet up. I'll have three glasses of this easily before dinner. If I would have to have dinner and not only the wine, I would definitely stick to something very, very simple. Simple flavors. A wonderful finish on this wine that I agree with Michael. It's got sort of a savouriness, a saltiness that actually makes me hungry and salivate.
Yeah, yeah.
Debbie?
So Torres makes some phenomenal wines, and I think that, agreeing with all of you, this is rather dangerously drinkable. I could have this pre-siesta, post-siesta, as they say. When in Spain, I would definitely...
When you go to siesta, yeah.
That's
all
it.
All sorts of times.
Absolutely.
Of the day.
But for me, I think that it's a really interesting expression of the two grapes that it is, because paredada, which is often used to make cava, it's one of the three grapes that you find in cava.
That's the Spanish sparkling
the
wine.
The Spanish sparkling wine that's made just like Method Champenois or our MCCs. And what's really interesting is that you don't see the wine that often as a still wine. And this is actually not from his traditional area. This is from Catalunya. And the label actually states that. So very fresh, very crisp, and I think really easy to drink.
Chris Gilmore, is this spit bucket stuff, or is it El Viva España? Yeah.
And it's not Hasta la Vista, baby, either. You know, this...
I thought that was Californian, but maybe...
Yeah, okay. when I first tried it, I wasn't so wild about it, because it seemed a bit astringent. But, you know, once you get past that and It's got a very distinctive aroma. The nose is very, very distinctive. But and yet at the same time, I can't quite get my mind around what's actually in there. And it's got a very long, lingering, and very very nice and creamy aftertaste. This is something that's grown on me in a relatively short space of time, and I think will continue to do so for a long time to come. This is nice.
Michael Oliphant, not surprisingly these days, this wine comes with a screw cap. And I remember last week we were drinking some really, really special KWV wines, which also didn't have a cork, but had a screw cap. Are we seeing the death of the cork?
No, I don't think so. I think, I mean, I can't remember the figures, but Debbie may know them, but I know that somewhere around about 80% of the world's wine is still being stoppered with a cork. When I was in Portugal a couple of years ago and tasted probably about 2,000 wines in 8 wine regions
in one morning,
I think only 3 of them were stoppered with a screw cap, and 1 or 2 suffered from cork taint.
That is the danger, isn't it, of the cork? There's a greater risk there'll be some sort of mold or fungus or something lurking on the end of the cork.
I don't think so anymore. I really don't believe... I mean, I've seen what people like Amarim do to treat their corks, and I have tasted so-called cork taint in screw cap bottles as well.
Chris Gilmore, does a wine with a screw cap, does that still qualify as a corker?
Absolutely. And you know what? And I think you've just discovered it recently, John. I find it so convenient. I find corks now such an extreme hassle that for me, it's actually a big turn-off having a cork.
Excellent. Well, we've heard it officially from Chris Gilmore. He really enjoys an easy screw. Joe.
Well, there are two friends in the wine industry that you don't want to have. The one is called a cork taint, and the other one is called cork teaser. And a cork teaser is a friend of yours that you always come to for dinner on a Saturday, and they promise to open that fantastic bottle of red, and they just never do. And of course, cork taint is the trichloride anisole, that which is the thing that spoils wine, that we don't want in our wine. So I'm all for Stelvin for screw cap. I believe University of Adelaide in Australia also did a great study where they put 16 wines aside, 8 in screw cap, 8 in cork, and over a 10-year period, after a 10-year period, tasted them, and only 2 of the 30 judges preferred the example in the cork. So it can mature as well. Definitely with our high-end wines, we've gone all to Stelvin. We feel it matures as well.
To what?
Stelvin screw cap.
Oh, okay.
That's the one that you saw on the Mentors. It's a specific one where you don't see the wiring on the outside, basically.
Okay. Debbie, do you agree with any of this?
So I think there's room in the market for both. And
what about yourself?
It's highly unlikely to find cork taint in a screw cap bottle, just because it's under screw cap doesn't mean it can't be screwed. There are many faults that can still occur with a screw cap. And I think that the verdict is really out. My cellar would certainly contain a fair amount of both, and Australia and New Zealand have led the charge internationally towards screw caps, and people have had varying levels of success with screw cap and with cork over the years. But as Michael said, there's a great deal of research happening at the moment in the cork industry, and there are certainly some amazing safeguards and technologies being put into use to lower the incidence of cork taint and to ensure that what goes into our bottles is of a higher quality and less susceptible to these sorts of problems.
And of course, Michael, once you're on the 10th or 12th bottle of the evening, it is easier to manipulate a screw cap than a cork, which may or may not be a good thing. But I must say, I enjoy the convenience of the screw cap. I just love the magic of that sound when the cork comes out of the bottle. How about you?
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more.
Ladies, there's a bit of magic. There's a bit of ritual to wine. You don't want to go into a restaurant and see some guy just going... You want to see them do all the theatre with the screw, with the corkscrew and all of that, don't you? Don't you, Jen?
I don't particularly care for that, I must be honest with you. I think, obviously...
Well, you'll take whatever Wimpy serves you, will you?
No. You got me there. No, obviously, look, there's definitely still something romantic about that. But practical, if you have a bottle and you go on a picnic, you know, that's the thing you always forget is the actual corkscrew.
I think that's a speak for yourself. I have a corkscrew in every handbag, in every car, in every drawer. I think I always have one handy. I think that there are places where it certainly is more convenient to have that screw cap. But it's not the only closure. There are many other closures being experimented with. And today you can buy wine in a pre-sealed glass.
So Debbie is not only a charming date, she's a useful one as well. Chris Gilmore, final thought from you before we conclude this, before we lurch into areas of libel.
The only place where I draw the line is when it comes to bubbly. I mean, I can't imagine having anything else but cork in bubbly.
Sure.
And port? What about port, ladies? Does it matter? Can you have port with a screw cap?
Haven't seen a port with a screw cap anywhere, and often that's because many of the ports are bottle aged beyond their point of production. But there's no reason why technically it couldn't happen.
Sure.
I agree. I think it's a cork that you actually twist that is used on most of these port bottles. So it's not something that you would need a corkscrew for. Yeah. But I don't see that changing soon.
Michael Oliphant, final thought on that, because we're almost out of time.
Final thought on cork.
Well, cork on port or sherry or one of the fortified wines.
I think that they have what they call a tea cork. The corks are now of such good quality. I can't think of a port that has a screw cap. There are a certain number of sherries which are produced here, which all of which have screw caps. I'm easy, but I'm like you. I like the sound of the cork coming out the bottle.
Well, many thanks to our guests this evening, and indeed to Michael. We were trying the Viña Sol from Torres, which to me was a very delightful wine. It shows that the Spaniards are slowly catching up with South Africa on quality, and indeed, they also have a great tradition. I'm just being facetious. I love this. I've also, like you, Michael, I've tried a couple of their reds as well, and thoroughly enjoyed those as well. So well done, Spain. Well done, Spain. You are our brothers in wine, not our rivals. And it just remains for me to thank our guests this evening. We have from ABSA, Chris Gilmore, from KWV, Joe van Veek-Furie, and from Wine Cellar, Debbie van Flyman. And of course, sitting there in Cape Town, wishing he was here in the far more attractive climate of Joburg with all our mountain scenery and sea, we have Michael Olivier. Michael, great to chat to you.
Thanks, John.
I'm John Fraser, and that was Divine Intervention.